We're in Jeremiah chapter 50 this evening. I'm going to read through these portions in Jeremiah 50 and 51 quickly. It points immediately toward the judgment of Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon historically through the Medes and the Persians, Cyrus and Darius, but it goes far beyond that because it speaks of an ultimate destruction of Babylon, like Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, which has not been realized yet. It talks about a mighty army being gathered from all the nations of the world, which we haven't seen yet. It talks about it happening in the days when Israel and Judah are gathered back to the land together into an eternal covenant with their God, which hasn't happened yet. So as we're reading through this, we certainly have a picture of the near and the far. Now, you have to read with it on your own time, Revelation 17 and 18. Revelation 17 gives us a picture of ecclesiastical Babylon, religious Babylon. And Revelation chapter 18 gives us a picture of economic Babylon, and again, destroyed in 1 hour in the last days. And I think there are glimmers of that in here. Also, remarkably, as we read through, you're going to see Saddam Hussein and the Persian Gulf crisis hidden in here. Again, 2 years ago, I'd have never believed it. If somebody would have told me, hey, we're headed for a catastrophe in the Persian Gulf, a war with Iraq, I would never have seen it. And that really freaks me out a little bit because, you know, you study the Bible for years and you think, well, you're at least a decent student of prophecy. And all of a sudden, here's this major portion of Scripture that nobody's ever even looked at. And it makes me wonder what else is in here that we don't have any ideas coming or maybe coming in the not too distant future. And I think it makes me step back and think, gee, you better not carve anything in stone here in regards to what you think you know the Bible says. Now, I would read Revelation 17 and 18, which speaks of the utter destruction of Babylon there. I want to begin by reading Zechariah chapter 5, if you'll turn there with me a few verses. Zechariah chapter 5, now it's to your right there from Jeremiah, not too far, about a quarter of an inch. Zechariah chapter 5, we have record of his seventh vision, beginning at verse 5. It says, "The angel that talked with me went forth and said unto me, Lift up now thine eyes and see, what is this that goeth forth?" And I think what a strange life these prophets have, because God's always saying, now, what do you think of this? And now, what do you think this is that you're seeing now? And Ezekiel just ends up saying, Lord, thou knowest. Verse 6 says, "I said, what is it? And he said, this is an ephah, the largest common measure of the day," certainly pointing to commerce. "It's an ephah that goeth forth." And he said, "Moreover, this is their resemblance through all the earth," relating to a global situation. "And behold, there was lifted up a talent of lead, and this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of the ephah." So, strange picture now. There's a woman sitting in the midst of this ephah, this measure. "And he said, this is wickedness. And he cast it into the midst of the ephah, and he cast the weight of lead upon the mouth thereof," sealed up evidently this woman there. "And then lifted up by my eyes and looked, and behold, there came out two women, and the wind was in their wings, for they had wings as of a stork," unclean bird. "And they lifted up the ephah between the earth and heaven. Then said I to the angel that talked with me, Whither do these bear the ephah? And he said unto me, To build it a house in the land of Shinar, which is Babylon, and it shall be established and set there upon her own base." So there is an indication that world economics will go back to Babylon, back to Iraq, back to maybe literally the city of Babylon, which has been in rebuilding for a number of years now. We're looking at an attempted peace treaty again with Israel and some of the Arab nations. And the problem with that always is if you get five or six groups of Arabs or Palestinians to agree on anything in regards to peace with Israel, it gives birth to 15 other radical groups that didn't exist before that who want to destroy that peace and destroy the nation of Israel. So we're looking at things that are heating up in the Middle East, and part of the agreement that the Antichrist makes with Israel in regards to her worship in the temple, part of that agreement may include an economic center in Babylon, in Iraq. Watch. Let's watch and see how that might evolve. There are billions of dollars that are going to be poured into the area of Kuwait in the next few years. And it's just like the United States to rebuild anything that we ever blow up and destroy. And who knows what money we will end up putting into Iraq before this is all over. But there is a possibility. Watch the area of Iraq and Babylon for maybe the European Economic Community or some world power to establish maybe the oil cartel there as an economic base. So watch those things, because there is an indication in Scripture economic Babylon will be reborn in that part of the world. Certainly there is a picture of an ultimate destruction of economic Babylon, like the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, that hasn't been realized yet. And it's all veiled within these prophecies in Jeremiah 50 and 51 that are giving us historical light in regards to Nebuchadnezzar, the immediate history. But we'll see as we read that it continually looks down the line further. So let's begin in Jeremiah 50, and we'll kind of browse through a little here. The word of the Lord that he spake against Babylon and against, notice also, the land of the Chaldeans, by Jeremiah the prophet. Declare ye among the nations, and publish, CNN maybe, set up a standard, publish and conceal not, say Babylon is taken, Bel, which is the god of storms, interestingly, is confounded, Merodach, whose temple is rebuilt today, is broken in pieces, her idols are confounded, her images are broken in pieces. Now, Chuck Missler, if you listen to have an opportunity to listen to any of his tapes, talks about friends of his 3 years ago that had a banquet in Nebuchadnezzar's southern palace, the very palace that it's rebuilt now, where many, many Tekel Upharsin was written on the wall, but the handwriting on the wall there at Belshazzar's feast. That southern palace has been rebuilt and is today being used for parties and so forth with heads of state. So here it mentions the temple of Merodach. That's also rebuilt in Babylon today. So who knows, as we look at this, how exactly it's going to pan out. Merodach is broken in pieces. Her idols are confounded. Her images are broken down. For out of the north, not really the Medes and the Persians, cometh up a nation against her, which shall make her land desolate. None shall dwell therein. They shall remove. They shall depart, both man and beast. Now, this didn't happen when in 538, when the Medes and the Persians took over Babylon. They came in at night. They stopped up the Euphrates. People didn't even realize the city was taken when they were in control. They kept the city as a capital in that part of the world, and even Alexander the Great used it as his capital in that part of the world. He died in the southern palace. So this total destruction of the land and the city hasn't been realized in the sense that we're seeing it here, and it seems there's yet something future. In those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah, together, going and weeping, they shall go and seek the Lord their God. They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces thitherward, saying, come and let us join ourselves to the Lord in a perpetual covenant that shall not be forgotten. So again, this is the in light of the regathering of Israel in the millennium. It seems that the destruction of the Babylon is one of the things that that they recognize is setting the timing for the return of Messiah. My people hath been lost sheep. Their shepherds have caused them to go astray. They have turned them away on the mountains. They have gone from the mountain to hill. They have forgotten their resting place. All that found them have devoured them. Their adversary said, we offend not, because they have sinned against the Lord. So their persecutors feel justified in destroying them because they've sinned against God. The habitation of justice, even the Lord, the hope of their fathers. Remove out of the midst of Babylon, go forth out of the land of the Chaldeans, be as the he-goats before the flocks. For lo, I will raise and cause to come up against Babylon an assembly of great nations from the north country. They shall set themselves in array against her, and from there shall she be taken. Their arrows, again, interesting, the Israeli missile, Jerusalem Post, 8-1890, exceeds Mach 9. And our Air Force commander that was fired at the beginning of the Persian Gulf crisis before the confrontation really began, and it ends up that he leaked something to the press about the fact that our military had some of the Israeli arrows in the field. He leaked that out. The press kept the lid on it because we didn't want to break up the coalition of Arab states that were with us. So interesting that arrows, that Israel would name that weapon the arrow, and it's coming into some of these prophecies. She shall be taken. Their arrows shall be as of a mighty man, expert. None shall return in vain. That's pretty accurate arrows. The Chaldean shall be a spoil. All that spoil her shall be satisfied, saith the Lord, because you were glad and you rejoiced, O ye destroyers of my heritage. Now, because Babylon rejoiced as they destroyed Israel, because you are grown fat as a heifer at grass, and you bellow as the bull. Your mother shall be sore confounded. She that bare you shall be ashamed. Behold, the hindermost of the nations shall be a wilderness, a dry land, and a desert. Because the wrath of the Lord, it shall not be inhabited, but it shall be wholly desolate. Everyone that goeth by Babylon shall be astonished and hiss at all of her pangs. Again, not in 538. Put yourselves in array against Babylon round about, all ye that bend the bow. Shoot at her, spare no arrows, for she has sinned against the Lord. And again, this isn't the way it was taken by the Medes and the Persians. Shout against her round about, she hath given her hand, her foundations are fallen, her walls are thrown down, for it is the vengeance of the Lord. Take vengeance upon her as she hath done unto her. Cut off the sower from Babylon, and him that handleth the sickle in the time of harvest, for fear of the oppressing sword. They shall turn everyone to his people. They shall flee everyone to his own land. Now again, we saw that at the beginning of the Persian Gulf crisis, all the refugees on the border of Jordan trying to get in. This also is something that didn't happen in 538 when the Medes and the Persians took Babylon. Foreign laborers from all over the world did not flee and try to escape the city at that point in time. Israel, now 17 through 20, talking about the restoration again. Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. First the king of Assyria hath devoured him, and last this Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath broken his bones. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will punish the king of Babylon and his land, as I have punished the king of Assyria. And I will bring Israel again to his habitation, and he shall feed on Carmel and Bashan. His soul shall be satisfied upon Mount Ephraim and Gilead. So both sides of the Jordan being restored to Israel. In those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the iniquity of Israel shall be sought for, and there shall be none. For the sins of Judah, they shall not be found. Certainly this hasn't been realized yet. For I will pardon them whom I reserve. Go up against the land of Marathaim, even against it and against the inhabitants of Pekod, waste and utterly destroy after them, saith the Lord, and do according to all that I have committed. There's a play on words here. In the time of Jeremiah, Maratim was a southern province in Babylon, and so was Pekodu, or however you say it, and they're parallel to the Hebrew words Marathaim and Pequod. Marathaim means double rebellion, and Pequod means judgment. And there's a play on words here. Because of their double rebellion, that God would bring judgment upon them. A sound of battle is in the land, and of great destruction. How is the hammer of the whole earth? Now this is Babylon, the hammer of the whole earth. Cut asunder and broken. How has Babylon become a desolation among the nations? I have laid a snare for thee. Thou art also taken, O Babylon. Thou wast not aware. Thou art confounded, also caught, because thou hast striven against the Lord. The Lord hath opened his armory and hath brought forth the weapons of his indignation. For this is the work of the Lord God of hosts in the land of the Chaldeans. Come against her from the utmost border. Open her storehouses, cast her up in heaps, and destroy her utterly. Let nothing be left. And again, we haven't seen this yet. Let's look in 29. Call together the archers against Babylon. All ye that bend the bow, camp against round about. Let none thereof escape. Recompense her according to her work, according to all that she hath done. Do unto her, for she has been proud against the Lord, against the Holy One of Israel. Therefore shall her young men fall in the streets, all her men of war shall be cut off in the day. In that day, saith the Lord, behold, I am against thee, O thou most proud, saith the Lord God of hosts, for thy day is come, and the time that I will visit thee. And the most proud shall stumble and fall, none shall raise him up. I will kindle a fire in his cities, and it shall devour round about. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. The children of Israel and the children of Judah were oppressed together, and all that took them captives held them fast. They refused to let them go. But their Redeemer is strong. The Lord of hosts is his name. He shall thoroughly plead their cause, that he may give rest to the land and disquiet the inhabitants of Babylon. What a day that will be. A sword is upon the Chaldeans, saith the Lord, and upon the inhabitants of Babylon, and upon her princes, and upon her wise men. A sword is upon the liars, and they shall dote. A sword is upon her mighty men, and they shall be dismayed. Now, a sword is upon her horses, upon her chariots. It talks about a destruction that will come. A drought is upon her waters. Now, of course, reflections of what took place this spring. The waters of the city being destroyed. They shall be dried up, for it is a land of graven images, and they are mad upon their idols. Now remember, as the Medes and the Persians came, they dried up the Euphrates, and they came in the riverbed. The ancient Babylon, scholars are divided. I hear all kinds of fantastic stories, but most agree that the walls were somewhere between 250 and 300 foot high. And that three chariots could ride abreast around the top of the wall. Then there was a quarter mile or so to the second wall. There was double walls. There were over 100 brass gates, 80 foot tall. There were over 250 towers, 100 foot higher than the wall, on the walls. And you had to get through the first wall, and then there was this, about a quarter mile at least, and they had vineyards and so forth, orchards in there. But there was a moat in that area you had to get through, and the city was basically impregnable by their standards. And what the Medes and the Persians did was they diverted the river Euphrates that ran through the midst of the city. They diverted it so that the water level dropped far enough, and as Belshazzar was in there having a party, he was drunk with all of his men, not even guarding the walls and so forth. They snuck in at night and took the city before anybody even realized it. They certainly didn't destroy it or pull it down, and yet that will come one day. So as we look at this, we wonder. Look in verse 40. It says, as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Now again, that's Isaiah 13. You want to read in conjunction with that. And Revelation 18. And it hasn't been realized yet. And the neighboring cities thereof, saith the Lord, so shall no man abide there, neither shall any son of man dwell there. Behold, a people shall come from the north, and a great nation, and many kings shall be raised up from the coasts of the earth. They shall hold the bow and the lance. They are cruel, will not show mercy. Their voice shall roar like the sea, and they shall ride upon horses. And everyone that put in array like a man of battle against against thee, O daughter of Babylon. The king of Babylon hath heard the report of them. And this reminds me of Saddam Hussein, who claimed to be Nebuchadnezzar III, how he was freaked out as the war progressed. The king of Babylon hath heard the report of them. His hands waxed feeble. Anguish took hold on him, and pangs as of a woman in travail. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan, the habitation of the strong. I will make them suddenly run away from her, who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her, or who is like me, or who will appoint me the time, and who is that shepherd that will stand before me? So the Lord in judgment like a roaring lion, who's the shepherd, who's the man that's going to stand in front of me as I come? Therefore hear ye the counsel of the Lord. He hath taken against Babylon, and his purposes that he has purposed against the land of the Chaldees, so against the city and against the land, Iraq. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitation desolate with them. And at the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved, and the cry is heard among the nations. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up against Babylon, and against them that dwell in the midst of them that rise up against me, a destroying wind. Desert storm, maybe? I don't know. Interesting to look at the not too distant things that took place over there in regards to some of these prophecies here. Certainly they did not happen in 538. The ultimate destruction, total destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah certainly lies ahead of us somewhere, but there seems to pop up in the middle of these prophecies a judgment on the land of the Chaldees, not just Babylon proper, the city of Babylon or the system of Babylon, but the land of the Chaldees also. So there's some interesting things as we enter into here. I will send to Babylon fanners that shall fan her and shall empty her land, for in the day of trouble they shall be against her round about. Against him that bendeth, let the archer bend his bow, and against him that lifteth himself up in his brigandine, and spare ye not her young men, destroy ye her utterly all her host. Thus the slain shall fall in the land of the Chaldeans, and they that are thrust through in the streets. For Israel hath not been forsaken, nor Judah of his God, the Lord of hosts, though their land was filled with sin against the Holy One of Israel. And certainly we, as we watched the news and those first Scud missiles hit Israel, we knew the Lord had joined the battle and Saddam Hussein had signed his own death warrant at that point in time. The reason, as far as I know, that Israel did not retaliate, well, first of all, knowing the Israelis, they knew they were hurting him more by not retaliating than they were by retaliating. It certainly gave them some favor in the, at least short-lived in the world press. But by the third day of the air war, again, the Mossad reported that we had gone way beyond the UN sanction to drive the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and our bombing raids were all through the country of Iraq, and we were basically bombing them to oblivion. We were destroying all their generators, all their factories, their water supplies, their electrical supplies, reducing them once again to a third world country. Israel knew they couldn't really do any more damage conventionally than we were doing, unless they would go to nuclear weapons or non-conventional weapons. If Israel pulled out non-conventional weapons out of the bag, then the Pan-Arab League is going to say, well, you gave stuff to them that you didn't give to us. Basically, they wanted to save their best stuff for a situation that involved national security. And they didn't feel at that time that the Scuds, that it did really involve national security. So they used tremendous restraint. David told me that they had what they call cool nuclear weapons loaded on their jets and in their silos. The radiation dies down very quickly. It's an improvement on neutron weapons so that you can move troops in immediately. They were targeting all of Western Iraq, but they used restraint knowing what we were doing behind the scenes. So, again, I think things very close, most of us sitting around having no idea. But some remarkable things took place over there behind the scenes, and the Holy One of Israel has not forsaken his people. Certainly Saddam Hussein realized it. Interesting, of course, the whole thing ended on Purim when Haman was hung on his own gallows as he tried to destroy the nation of Israel. And they had the Sodomtosh over there in Israel this year instead of the Hamantosh. Flee out of the midst of Babylon and deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. He will render unto her a recompense. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand, and hath made all the earth drunken. And we hear about this in Revelation. The nations have drunken of her wine. Therefore the nations are mad. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Howl for her. Take balm for her pain. If so, she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go every one to his own country, for her judgment is reached unto heaven, and is lifted up even unto the skies. Now again, literally millions of Egyptians and Turks and Philippines and English, Europeans, Indians, Pakistanis fled Iraq when the bombing started. Millions fled. And that's something that didn't happen in 538. So I think we're seeing parts of that here. Interesting. Look at verses 10 and 11. The Lord hath brought forth our righteousness. Come, let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. Make bright the arrows. There they go again. Gather the shields. Desert shield, maybe. The Lord hath raised up, and notice this, the spirit of the kings of the Medes. Not the Medes and the Persians. You know, it's interesting as you read Daniel chapter 10, and Daniel is praying, and he prays for 3 weeks fasting, and Gabriel shows up and says, hey, when you started to pray 3 weeks ago, I headed out on my way, but the prince of Persia came and withstood me, and I had a fight with him, a principality and power of evil nature. I had a deal with him, and then Michael finally came and helped me out. Like, Gabriel must have been relieved when he said, hey, Michael's here now, you know. And so he said, now I've come and to speak to thee. After this, I'm going to contend again with the prince of Persia. And then the prince of Greece comes after. And that was 200 years later. So evidently there are the prince of Persia is a principality in power that was behind the Medes and the Persians as empires were changing behind the scenes. There were spiritual things taking place. God says again, here in the last days, I'm going to raise up the spirit of the Medes once again. Maybe he's been bound somewhere. Who knows? And bring about judgment once again in the land of the Chaldees. Interesting. For his devices against Babylon to destroy it. Because it is a vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. Now, God, when he's looking at Babylon even today in Iraq, feels that he's never really settled the score for the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple 500 years before Christ. So he says when he brings ultimate destruction, it will be the vengeance of his temple. He keeps remarkable records. Set up the standard upon the walls of Babylon, make the watch strong, set up the watchmen, prepare the ambushes. Now, we saw that the first night as the cruise missiles were coming in, all the anti-aircraft stuff. Prepare all your ambushes, for the Lord hath both devised and hath done that which he spake against the inhabitants of Babylon. O thou that dwellest upon many waters, abundant in treasures, thine end is come. Now, certainly we're looking at Revelation 18, economic Babylon. It speaks of the men that are in ships howling and wailing then as they see her destruction. Thine end is come, the measure of thy covetousness. The Lord of hosts has sworn by himself, saying, surely I will fill thee with men as with caterpillars, and they shall lift up a shout against thee. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom, has stretched out the heaven by his understanding. And when he uttereth his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens. He causeth the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings with rain and bringeth forth the wind out of his treasures. What a remarkable description. We talked about this a little more in depth in Job. Every man is brutish by his knowledge, I'd say. In comparison to that knowledge, man is brutish. Every founder is confounded by the graven image, for his molten image is falsehood and there is no breath. What a comparison between idols and the living God. They are vanity, the work of errors. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. Let's just continue to read. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things. He's formed all things, the Creator. and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war. For with thee I will break in pieces the nations, and with thee I will destroy the kings. And I think in the next six verses or so, he used the Hebrew word for shatter 9 times. And with thee I will break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee I will break in pieces the chariot and his rider, and with thee also I will break in pieces man and woman, and with thee I will break in pieces old and young, and with thee I will break in, you get the idea, break in pieces young man and maid. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock. With thee I will break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of oxen. With thee I will break in pieces the captains and the rulers. And I will render unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of the Chaldee all their evil that they have done unto Zion. So ultimately God says that Israel, the nation of Israel, is his rod in regards to the nations of the world. And of course Zechariah tells us that Israel and Jerusalem will become the stumbling block of all the nations of the world. You know, as man pursues his own way in rebellion against God, as we look at the morals of our own nation declining, as we look at people that hate the nation of Israel and would seek her destruction to drive the Jews in the Mediterranean, and basically, believe me, that's the bottom line in regards to the Palestinians and the Arab nations. They will not be satisfied until every Jew is dead and driven into the Mediterranean. That's the bottom line. They may take parts of the West Bank and the Golan Heights temporarily to set themselves up in a better position, but that is their ultimate goal. And it's a spiritual thing that started with Isaac and Ishmael, and it won't be settled so easily. It won't be negotiated. But God says he's going to use the nation of Israel to bring about the judgment of the whole world. He's going to use them as the firing cap for the whole thing to go off, his whole judgment in regards to the nation. So, yes, we look at Russia right now, and we look at the Iron Curtain coming down, and the different things that are taking place in different places in the world, but keep your eyes on Israel, because God's not done, and that is the center of his plan in our days. It hasn't changed. Verse 25, "Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroys all the earth. And I will stretch out mine hand upon thee and roll thee down from the rocks and will make thee a burnt mountain. And they shall not take of thee a stone for a corner, nor a stone for a foundation, but thou shalt be desolate forever, saith the Lord. Set ye up a standard in the land and blow the trumpet among the nations." Interesting again. "Prepare the nations against her. Call together against her the kingdoms of Ararat, Mini, Ashkenaz. Appoint a captain against her. Cause the horses to come up as the rough caterpillars. Prepare against her the nations with the kings of the Medes, the captains thereof, and all the rulers thereof, and all the land of dominion." Now, it's interesting, again, as you look at the destruction by the Medes and the Persians, the city wasn't destroyed. There wasn't a total destruction. As you look at the destruction in Revelation 17 and 18, it happens in 1 hour. There seems to be, in the midst of this, another judgment on the land of the Chaldees that takes place over a period of time as all the nations are gathered together, which I believe is something we saw earlier this year. The mighty men of Babylon, interesting, look verse 30, have ceased to fight, they have remained in their holds. Remarkable prophecy. How many of them were buried alive? How many of the Republican Guard that we heard so much about never got out of the ground? How much are we hearing on the news today about the bulldozers and the tanks that went in and buried thousands of them alive? Here it says, the mighty men of Babylon became too afraid, they ceased to fight. They remained in their holds. Their might hath failed. They became as women. They have burned their dwelling places. Her bars are broken. One post shall run to meet another. We completely shut down their communication system. It says here they're using foot runners. One post shall run to meet another, one messenger to meet another, and show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end, and that the passengers are passages. Now again, probably looking to the Euphrates, the passages are stopped, and the reeds they have burnt with fire, and the men of war are affrighted. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. It is time to thresh her, yet a little while, and the time of her harvest shall come. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, hath devoured me. He hath crushed me. He hath made me an empty vessel. He hath swallowed me up like a dragon. He hath filled his belly with my delicacies. He hath cast me out. Now, Israel, God speaking on behalf of Israel, the violence done to me and to my flesh is upon Babylon, shall the inhabitant of Zion say, and my blood upon the inhabitants of the Chaldeans, shall Jerusalem say. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will plead thy cause and take vengeance for thee, and I will dry up her sea and make her springs dry. Now, certainly as Belshazzar in Daniel 5 was having his party there, and everyone was drunk, and they had taken out the holy vessels of the Lord's temple and were mocking God, and the handwriting came on the wall. Certainly the waters, the springs were dried up, and the city was being taken, just as Jeremiah prophesied, without them even realizing it. Babylon shall become heaps, a dwelling place for dragons and an astonishment. Verse 38, they shall roar together like lions and yell as lions' whelps. In their heat I will make their feast, and I will make them drunken. They shall rejoice and sleep a perpetual sleep. That sounds scary. And not wake, saith the Lord. I will bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams with the he-goats. How is Shishak, Babylon again, taken? How is the praise of the whole earth surprised? How has Babylon become an astonishment among the nations? The sea has come up upon Babylon. She is covered with a multitude of waves thereof. Now certainly looking down to Revelation 18 again. Her cities have become a desolation. Verse 44, I will punish Bel in Babylon. I will bring forth out of his mouth that which he has swallowed up. And the nation shall not flow together any more unto him. Yea, the wall of Babylon shall fall. My people, go ye out of the midst of her, and deliver ye every man his soul from the fierce anger of the Lord, lest your heart faint. Now, certainly there were the captives. The captivity in Babylon for 70 years. But it seems, again, an economic situation will arise. Well, many Jews will have something to do with trading and economics in Babylon, and there's a warning again to come out, something we really haven't seen fulfilled completely. Therefore, verse 47, behold, the days come that I will do judgment upon the graven images of Babylon, upon the whole land. The whole land shall be confounded, all her slain shall fall in the midst of her, and so forth. 49, Babylon hath caused the slain of Israel to fall. So at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. Interesting and quite fitting. As you read through the Bible, you see this kind of the story of, you know, like the tale of two cities, Jerusalem and Babylon, you know, compared all the way through the scripture. And here, finally, Babylon has polluted all the nations of the world from Genesis chapter 11, where false religion really was given birth to, and Babylonian religions and systems and economics and one world government have influenced the whole human race for these thousands of years. Ultimately, there will be a judgment, and how fitting, upon Babylon, when all the men of the world that are gathered there will be judged. All the slain of the earth shall fall there. Yea, they have escaped the sword. Ye that have escaped the sword, go away and stand not still. And the Lord won't have to tell me that. Remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. We are confounded because we have heard a reproach. Shame has covered our faces, and so forth. Verse 52, wherefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will do judgment upon her graven images, and through all her land the wounded shall groan. Though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come upon her, saith the Lord. A sound of a cry cometh from Babylon, and great destruction from the land of the Chaldeans, because the Lord has spoiled Babylon and destroyed out of her the great voice. Now, he's been quiet for a while. When her waves do roar like the great waters, a noise of their voice is uttered, because the spoiler has come upon her, even upon Babylon and upon her mighty men that are taken. Every one of their bows is broken, for the Lord, the God of recompenses, shall surely repay. I will make drunk her princes and her wise men, her captains, her rulers, her mighty men. They shall sleep a perpetual sleep, not wake, saith the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken. Her high gates shall be burned with fire. The people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire, they shall be weary, I guess. So as we come this far, look, we looked at the prophecies against Edom, against Moab, against Ammon, against the Philistine country. They were all kind of brief, and they were pointed even against Kedar and so forth. Now these two long chapters dealing with Babylon, and certainly Babylon is a major theme all the way through the scripture, again from Genesis 10 onward, Genesis 11 onward, and all the way to two whole chapters in Revelation 17 and 18, this great Babylonian religious system that has influenced all the history of mankind. And we see it today with Shirley MacLaine and the New Age and these channelers. It's nothing more than an ancient Babylonian system. There are traces of it within the church and places and so forth. And then this Babylonian economic system, interesting, if you'll watch some of the advertisements lately, there was a full-page ad in the Smithsonian magazine, and I shared it with you once. I think I've got it filed away somewhere. And it was a picture of the Tower of Babel. And it said, this fable is told in the Bible about, you know, a man all speaking one language and how that God confounded them and drove them. And now through computers, we have Babylon revisited. Through computers, economically, we were able to speak all the same language. Once again, full-page ad in Smithsonian. I have a full-page ad from the New York Times that says, the way beyond Babel. In other words, the way to get beyond what God did at the Tower of Babel. And the whole article is about an AT&T and some of these different systems that are trying to make a worldwide computer hookup so that there's economic Babylon again, to where computers worldwide all speak the same language. So it's an economic Babylon that we're going to see. One language again, the language of computers. And this is all going to come to the fore again, not in the not-too-distant future. I am convinced, as I look at our own nation, I've shared this before, that we're in the midst of crisis management, where we've created a crisis. The movers and the shakers and the power brokers in this world have created a situation where drugs are disintegrating our inner cities. Basically, what we see in America today is anarchy. You know, I hear all this stuff about Israel, how dangerous it is to go visit Israel. I think there's only been two Americans killed in Israel in the last 15 years. And there were 300 and some drug-related deaths in Philadelphia in the first few months. I mean, you know, David says, I'm afraid to come to America. People get shot in malls. They get shot in McDonald's. I mean, it's dangerous there. You know, we're safe here with our troubles in this part of the world. Again, 150 people a year in America drown in a bathtub. So it's 150 times more dangerous to take a bath than it is to go to Israel. 50 people a year choke on steak in restaurants to death in America. So it's 50 times more dangerous to eat steak than it is to go to Israel. You know, as we look at the world situation, I think through crisis management, we've left our society in America go to the point where the government will present us with an answer. When the average middle-class father is screaming for an answer, when he's afraid for his own family, afraid for his own children, someone's going to say, well, if we go to electronic funds transfer and do away with the cash, there's no more drug problems, no more drug sales. You can't sell drugs for electronic numbers. No one will break into your house and steal your video unit anymore because you can't sell it. No one is going to steal your children, thank God, and sell them on the black market anymore because you can't sell them for electronic numbers. Every wife that's supposed to be getting child support or money from her divorced husband, it'll come right out of his pay every week. It'll solve that problem. Every industry and every business will pay taxes directly through electronic funds transfer. It'll get rid of the deficit in a few years. I think they're going to present it to us, and it's the most logical, brilliant, to the carnal mind, answer to the world's problems.
And it's going to look like great news when it first comes on the scene. And what I think they're doing is they're preparing our hearts for it, because Americans, like, I like to have cash in my wallet, you know what I mean? Americans don't give up their freedom very easily at all. And at the end of World War II, when Rockefeller and the United Nations tried to bring about a one-world movement, it was resisted. They couldn't get the American public to go for it. So behind the scenes of the Trilateral Commission and certain of these people, you know, bringing about a one-world economy. Again, when the largest exporter in Japan today is IBM, when you think it would be Toyota or Toshiba or somebody else, you realize we've set up a global economy. It doesn't matter so much what country you're from as it does what company you're from when you travel globally. The whole time we were seeing the car crunch here in America, the European Ford was outselling everything else. The Japanese ship all their cars here, and they like to buy BMWs and Mercedes-Benzes. The Japs don't want Japanese cars. They sell them here in America. We were selling American cars in Europe, and the Europeans were selling their cars in Japan. So we were just shipping everything east, you know. And we created a global economy, and a global, when there's a global economy, you're going to have global government. Because anybody you pay taxes to is a government, whether they like to admit it or not. And I think one of the last steps is going to be getting us to step in line with the European Economic Community. When they click in, certainly with all different countries and taxes and monetary systems, the computer is going to ultimately be the answer to that government over there. If the Japanese are investing as much money as they can right now into Europe, so is the United States, and ultimately, it will be electronic fund system that ties the whole thing together. Somehow, that system evidently will shift to Babylon as the economic capital of the world. It seems that the Antichrist, at least for the last 3.5 years of Daniel's 70th week, may set up his own, after he destroys spiritual Babylon, may set up his own capital there. And that's why this prophecy says at that point, the great voice will be destroyed out of Babylon, and God will rain down on that economic Babylonian system that tried to get started back in Genesis 11 and finally comes to a consummation. God will rain down fire and brimstone and destroy it in a remarkable way, so that all the merchants of the whole world will weep and wail as God is bringing judgment. Two whole chapters here, two whole chapters in Revelation, Isaiah 13, again in Isaiah 21, different places. A tremendous amount written about Babylon. Hard to put it all in categories. Hard to be dogmatic about it. Things have sprung out of these two chapters, particularly in the last 2 years, that we'd have never dreamed of. In fact, when Saddam Hussein was threatening to rain fire on Israel as we were building up our troops, the head rabbi in the great synagogue in Jerusalem read to the Knesset Isaiah 50 and 51. I got a fax from Israel from David and said the Knesset allowed him to read Jeremiah 50 and 51 on nationwide television in Israel to tell the people of Israel not to be afraid, because it says that God is going to stand up, that he hasn't forsaken his people, and he was going to take up the battle for them. And of course, what we saw over there was miraculous. 40 scuds falling on the nation. No one being killed by a scud. A number of people were killed by not taking the filters out of their mask. A few people died of heart attacks. The 40th scud killed one man sitting in his apartment. But all those other scuds, thousands of apartment buildings destroyed. No one was killed. In fact, David said one house fell down around a man. This two-story house collapsed and his head was sticking out of the roof. He couldn't move. He was looking around. His dog was dead in the house. He was alive. They pried him out. His neck was scratched from where the roof fell and stopped, but he was perfectly fine. One apartment building in the middle of it, David faxed me from Israel. Everybody ran down. They had two bomb shelters in the basement for some reason, without communicating, Everybody ran to the same bomb shelter. The other one was gutted by a scud. So all through, it's almost as God was saying to Israel, look, 39 stripes, mercy. 40 is what could have happened. You know, remarkable what we're seeing in the world today. And it will all ultimately center around Israel. You can be sure of that as you look. So Babylon, an interesting subject, I think worth your time to read. Here, Jeremiah now tells Sariah, the brother of Baruch. Remember his scribe that had been working with him all through the book. He gives us his lineage so we can understand that it's Baruch's brother. This scribe, Sariah, is in Babylon. He's going to give Sariah now this whole prophecy about Babylon, tell him to read it in Babylon, and when he's done reading it aloud to encourage the people there, that he should take it and bind it up with a stone and cast it into the river Euphrates. And God says so that, you know, Babylon one day is going to be swallowed up and sink and never rise again. So let's read through the rest of this chapter. The word which Jeremiah the prophet commanded Sariah, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, when he went with Zedekiah, now this is Sariah went with Zedekiah, the king of Judah into Babylon in the fourth year of his reign, and this Sariah was a quiet prince. So Jeremiah wrote in a book, in a scroll, all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even all these words which are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon and shalt see and shalt read all of these words, then shalt thou say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place. Now God said, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. Saddam Hussein should have thought of that before he set the first scud to Israel. Thus shalt thou say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place, Babylon, that is, to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but that it shall be desolate forever. And it shall be, when thou hast made an end of reading this book, this scroll, that thou shalt bind a stone to it and cast it into the midst of the Euphrates. And thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. Thus far are the words of Jeremiah. Now, chapter 52, added to the end of the prophecy, is basically similar to earlier chapters, and I believe the last chapter of 2 Kings. It gives us the timing, 52:1, in regards to Zedekiah when he was 21 years old. He began to reign. It gives us the timing here. He did that which was evil, verse 2, in the sight of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem in Judah, till he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. Now he tried to rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. And it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the tenth month, in the tenth day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his army, against Jerusalem, and pitched against it, and built forts against it round about. Now, the siege lasted about 2 years, until there was so much starvation in the city that they finally broke through the wall and took the city. As you breeze through this, there are dates that are conflicting with the record. In 2 Kings, there are chapters written on it by scholars. It will bore you to death. It bored me to death. When we get to heaven, the Lord will explain it all sufficiently. Many have taken good stabs at it, and I think there's some great reasons why there's some conflicting records here, and they can fall into place quite nicely, but it won't do anything for you this week while you're stuck in traffic, mad at the guy in front of you, desiring to have the fruit of the Spirit in your life. So, but the army of the Chaldeans pursued after the king, and they overtook Zedekiah. Remember, he tried to run in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. Verse 9, they took the king and carried him up to the king of Babylon, to Nebuchadnezzar, to Riblah, and the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him, and the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. Remember, we read this before. He slew also the princes of Judah in Riblah. Then he put out the eyes of Zedekiah. Zedekiah is 32 years old at this point in time, been warned for 11 years by Jeremiah to surrender, that the Lord had raised up Nebuchadnezzar, that if they would surrender, they would survive. And Zedekiah and his false prophets rebelled. And the king of Babylon bound him in chains and carried him to Babylon and put him in prison till the day of his death. Now, again, there's an interesting prophecy that comes together here, because one prophet said that Zedekiah would not see Babylon, and this other record says he died there. Of course, the interesting thing in the record, it says that he took him to Riblah, slaughtered his sons in front of him. It was the last sight he saw, then put out his eyes, and then took him to Babylon. So he did go to Babylon, but didn't see Babylon, just like the prophet said, and it all lines up quite nicely for us. Now in the fifth month, in the 10th day of the month, which was in the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, which served the king of Babylon, and he completely burned down Jerusalem and destroyed it. It tells us in these verses, up to verse 16 here. Verse 16 says, "But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left certain of the poor of the land as vine dressers and husbandmen." So the poor that had continually been oppressed, and you read through the minor prophets about the injustice in the land, end up to be the ones that are left there to be vine dressers, and God's justice taking over large parts of the land. Now, any of you are going on the tour with us next month to Israel, you'll see down in the southern part of the city, you can see the two huge black lines, one where in 70 AD where Titus burnt the city, and the other one where Nebuchadnezzar, these very chapters we're reading, you can see the evidence and mute testimony against idolatry and turning away from the living God. Now, verses 17 to 23 are included because, if you remember, and I don't see how you could, back in chapter 27, there was another prophet, a phony prophet named Hananiah. Part of the vessels from the temple had already been carried to Babylon. Jeremiah began to say, "You better pray for the vessels and the things that still remain." Hananiah stood up and said, "Jeremiah, you're a false prophet, because within 2 years or so, our people are going to be free from Nebuchadnezzar. They're going to come back to the land, and they're going to bring all the holy vessels back with them." Jeremiah said, "Hey, bub, you're a false prophet, and what's left here will also be carried away." And I think he said more than that. He said, "And besides that, within 5 months, you aren't going to be around anymore." And then it tells us, I think, 2 months later, Hananiah kicked the bucket and he was gone. So what it's including here now is a record of the remainder of the temple implements and instruments and the two pillars, Boaz and Jacinth, that were carried to Babylon, confirming the prophecy of Jeremiah back in chapter 27. So the pillars of brass that were in the house of the Lord, and the bases, and the brazen sea that was there. You read the description as Solomon put it all together. The Chaldeans broke and carried all the brass of them to Babylon. Now, a remarkable feat, because it tells us in 2 Kings that it was beyond, the weight of these things was beyond measure. It gives us weights and measures for the gold, the silver, and then when it gets to all the brass, it says there was so much brass, the Holy Spirit says we couldn't even measure it. We didn't even bother to measure it. So, remarkable feat now to carry all of this brass all the way to Babylon. The cauldrons also, the shovels, the snuffers, the spoons, the vessels of brass that they ministered with, they took away. The basins, the fire pans, the bowls, the cauldrons, the sticks, the spoons. That which was of gold and gold, and that which was of silver and silver, took the captain of the guard away, and the two pillars, and the one sea, 12 brazen bulls that were under the bases that held up the sea that King Solomon had made in the house of the Lord, the brass of all the vessels, it was without weight, it was beyond measure. And concerning the pillars, and the height of one pillar was 18, 27 foot or so, and it tells that they carried away these huge brass pillars, cut them up and broke them in pieces, and all the pomegranates and everything, and took them away. Verse 24 says, "And the captain of the guard took Sariah, the chief priest, and Zephaniah," and it begins to tell us, the second priest, the three keepers of the door, all the chief men, and talks about the deportations here. He took also out of the city the eunuchs and so forth, and says how they carried them to Babylon. And it gives us the numbers of those that were deported, which don't agree with the numbers in 2 Kings 25. The numbers are way smaller, so they think that these were other deportations that were subsequent to the major deportations. Like, I can see everybody's really interested in that. But if I don't say it, someone's going to come up and ask me about it. You know, somebody's going to catch me and not on my toes. So it ends, Jeremiah. Here we are at the end, verse 31. And it came to pass in the 7th and 30th year of the captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, in the 12th month, in the 5th and 20th day of the month, that evil Merodach, king of Babylon, son of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, who would name your son evil Merodach? You know, gee, isn't he cute? What do you want to call him? Evil Merodach. He looks like an evil Merodach. Yeah, sure. Evil Merodach, king of Babylon, in the first year of his reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, and brought him forth out of prison. So, interesting. They found record of this in the cuneiform tablets that were unearthed in that part of the world, and they found some ancient records in Judah that said though Zedekiah was on the throne, those believing Jews still considered Jehoiachin to be the real king and to be the royal lineage, and ends up Zedekiah dies in captivity and Jehoiachin is preserved, and when evil Merodach comes to power, he brings him out of the prison, it says, verse 32, spoke kindly unto him and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon, and changed his prison garments. He did continually eat bread before the king of Babylon all the days of his life, and for his diet there was a continual diet given to him of the king of Babylon, every day a portion until the day of his death, all the days of his life. So believe it or not, Jeremiah ends on a very positive note, as Jehoiachin is certainly a type of, you know, here's Judah's rebellious king that wouldn't listen, shown mercy, and restored at the end, his lineage continuing, and it certainly harks of the promises that God made to the nation that in the last days he would restore them, take his rebellious people, raise them up again, make them a nation, and Jeremiah ending on that very positive note, lifting him up as a type of what will happen in all of Israel. So the end of the prophecies of Jeremiah.